Greetings and welcome to the Consolidated Audit Trail Industry Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. This call is being recorded Tuesday, April 16th, 2019. And now I'd like to turn the conference over to Paul McKinney. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to listen to call in today and hear what we have to say. Today's presentation is going to be on the firm designated ID, or the FDID. And really the focus on this presentation is to get out some basic concepts out to the industry about FDID to get firms and service bureaus, CAT reporting entities up to speed so that they are in a position and understand the requirements of reporting the FDID in Phase 2A. Also wanted to acknowledge all the hard work that went into putting this material together. It was a collective effort between, the participants, FINRA CAT, as well as the IM TechSpec working group. So we have a lot of really valuable input from the industry, which we certainly appreciate. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Shelley Bolin.
Great. Thanks, Paul. So we're going to dive in and talk about some key concepts that I think are foundational in trying to understand the FDID. And as Paul said, the objective of today's call is to get people a good understanding of what the requirement is for FDID reporting in Phase 2A. So FDID is part of the very first phase, equity and options 2A and 2B. As we'll talk about and through these key concepts and how this gets used in CAT, it does get built upon in 2C with allocation reporting and then later with customer and account reporting. So some of these concepts we're bringing in together so people can have an understanding of how it all relates and will eventually come together. But that being said, there still will be many conversations that have to happen when we get closer to 2C and the allocation reporting and the customer and account data. So we are in no way attempting to answer all of those questions here, but rather get a common understanding of how FDID fits into the bigger picture in CAT and how it will eventually all come together. We think that's important so people will understand what their requirement is in 2A. So starting on the first slide here, very core fundamental concepts of part of Rule 613. And just to let everyone know, this deck is published on the website, so people can feel free to look at it at will there along with the WebEx here. But at the end of the deck are the specific rule sites and specific language from the exemptive relief and the customer information approach and how all of this came to be in the final approved version of the plan. So if any, we're trying to just focus here for presentation purposes on the very core concepts and not try to bring all the rule language onto the slides, but you can look at the back of the deck, if you want to see the actual rule language around this. So let's go to the two very fundamental concepts in CAT. And this is obviously the big game changer. This is what makes CAT, CAT. There are customers, and we're going to talk as we get through the deck exactly what that means, examples of customers, et cetera, that the customers as defined in Rule 613 and a customer in CAT gets represented by a CAT customer ID, or as we call it, a CCID. The second fundamental concept is trading accounts, and the trading accounts addressed in the plan and are represented by the firm designated ID, FDID. So customers are CCID, accounts are FDID, and we wanted to make sure it's very clear when we're talking FDIDs and trading accounts. This can be customer accounts, it can be firm accounts. So prop trading accounts, market making accounts, all those kind of firm accounts have an FDID. just like a customer account would. Another very fundamental concept and understanding that everyone should have is that a customer can have more than one trading account. So, for example, an individual could have an individual account. If they're married, they could have a joint account with their spouse. Or a trading account could have more than one customer. That's an example of that. A customer can have, I can have my individual account. I can have my joint account. So it's a many-to-many. A customer can have many accounts. An account can have many customers. So when you put the label CCID and FDID on it, a CCID can be related to multiple FDIDs, and an FDID can be related to multiple CCIDs. All right, so let's move on to the next slide and dive a bit deeper into customers. So in Rule 613, a customer is defined. There's two types of customers within the definition. One is an account holder. The other is any person from whom the BD is authorized to accept trading instructions, if that's different than the account holder, so referred to it as an authorized trader. And a unique CCID will be assigned to each customer on the account. That means each account holder and each authorized trader. And this allows CAT to consistently identify a customer across all broker-dealers. So part of CAT, the whole purpose and objective is to be able to surveil or look at from a regulatory perspective how a single customer may be trading across all broker-dealers. So that is what the CCID is designed to do. All right, so let's move on to the next slide and talk a little bit about some examples of who would have a CCID. What does this look like with some practical examples? So obviously an individual investor would be a customer. A financial advisor who may have discretion and can be an authorized trader on an account would have a CCID. An institution can have a CCID, so we can have natural persons and institutional legal entity customers. A third-party money manager could have a CCID, would be considered a customer having a CCID. Any individual that has trading authorization for the account would have a CCID, as we've said. There is one note here, and this is, I think we have this in the back of the deck as well, an exception, so to speak, is if an individual with trading authorization is employed by the entity that is an account holder. So think of a firm's trading account and the traders they employ that trade that account. Because the trader is employed by the broker-dealer who is the account holder, all of those individual traders would not have to have individual CCIDs and be identified as authorized traders because they are employed by the account holder. And then finally, an entity that has trading authorization. So it can be an individual, natural person with trading authorization, or an entity that has trading authorization. All right, let's move on to the next slide and now dive a little bit deeper into trading accounts. And we'll kind of go through the same exercise we just went through with customers, so looking at the FDID. So industry members have to assign a single FDID to each trading account at its firm. And this has to be unique across all vendors because what a FDID will allow from a regulatory perspective is to track the trading activity of a single trading account across an entire broker-dealer. Inside a single broker-dealer here, but across all securities and across time. How is an account trading inside a single broker-dealer? So that's what the FDID achieves in CAT. So the only exception, just to note here, and there are a series of FAQs we have published on the website as well that address some of these concepts, but there could be the only time you would reuse an FDID is if, in fact, you changed the actual account number at your firm and maybe closed the account and transferred to new platforms or whatever. It would be a very limited set of circumstances, but the actual account number at the firm would have had to have changed to be able to change the FDID. So I think that there's the FAQ site M10 if someone wants to look deeper at that FAQ. So let's move on to the next slide and get into one additional level of FDID. So we've talked about it's a trading account. However, there are certain trading scenarios and flows at certain broker-dealers that have been acknowledged in the exemptive relief and the customer information approach, where at the time a customer places an order, the account structure may not be available or in the flow, the workflow at the time the order is received. So there is this exception where a relationship ID can be used in place of the account number. I think it might be a little bit easier if we just put a real-life example on this and what it looks like and what it exactly we're talking about here. So in the example we have on the slide, let's say that there is a client, big fund manager, that has that trades with industry member A. And industry member A's systems know big fund manager as BFM1. And they may have many sub-accounts or other kind of related accounts that get used later in allocations, but at the time the order is received, the firm systems simply have it tagged as BFM1. So what the exemptive relief would allow is for that, I don't know if everyone's screen, my screen just jumped, would be allowed to use BFM1 as the FDID. So essentially, the industry member can use whatever specific identifier is available in its system at the time of order receipt. So because the identity of the customer here, big fund manager, and who big fund manager is, and their LEI, their LPID, whatever else might go along with that, that is going to be obtained by the CCID. So big fund manager, the client, will have a CCID. But for purposes of order placement at the beginning of the day or whenever they come in with the order, there's not an account number available to the flow. This BFM1 is used, but it is not intended to be the customer record with LEI, LPID, whatever else is on it. So just trying to draw that distinction here. All right, so let's move to the next slide. And like we did with customers, talk through some practical examples of what an FDID would represent. So it could be an individual customer account. It can be an institutional customer's account. And when we talk about firm accounts, remember we said it could be a customer account, it could be a firm account. So firms, depending on how their systems are designed and their account structure is set up, they may use average price accounts. It could be an average price account that's designated for a specific customer, like a master account or something. The FDID could represent that. It could also be an average price account that gets shared across multiple separate and distinct customers for order aggregation purposes and things like that. That can be an FDID, that average price account number. It can also be an entity ID or some sort of entity-level identifier of the firm where an employee of the firm is exercising discretion over multiple customer accounts. So think of an FA or financial advisor of a firm who might have a set of accounts that they have discretion over. They might originate an order that will later be allocated across their account, that FA's particular account. So when that initial order gets originated by the FA, the entity ID of the firm that employs that FA could be used as the FDID. Like I said before, it could be a proprietary trading account. If it's your market-making account, literally your market-making account number. And then, as we just talked about, a relationship ID or a firm-assigned identifier that represents a trading relationship, like the big fund manager example we just looked at. So let's move on to the next slide and trying to present this in terms of or speak sort of the language of what kind of CAT events you're going to report this on and how you would determine what the source of the FDID is, and if you think about it in the context of the event type you're going to report to CAT. So in 2A, let's focus on phase 2A, 2B. Y'all have new client orders, so a new order you got from a customer. You'll have new firm orders, so you originate a proprietary order for your own firm. That is on a new order event. So what that would look like for an FDID would be, from a client, could be the retail account number for the customer. If it's a retail customer, could be the institutional account number if it's an institution, or in a big fund manager example we just went through, it could be that BFM1 to show the relationship identifier. In the client context, this must always be masked. So there's a slide in just a little while on the masking requirements, but essentially for security reasons and for obvious things, we don't want real account numbers being transmitted on the transaction data for customer accounts. So in both of these contexts, we say it must be masked. Let's move to your own account. So it's in a proprietary account of your firm. So it would always be the firm trading account number. Or if it's an average price account that an order is getting originated and routed out of, it's that average price account number. And when we're talking about firm accounts, and there's an FAQ for this, the masking is left up to the discretion of the broker-dealer who owns the account. So if a broker-dealer feels that they need to mask for their own comfort and security reasons their proprietary account numbers, they absolutely may do that. If they don't think that transmitting an actual proprietary account number poses any risk to them, that if it were compromised, someone can, walk into a branch and affect a transaction off of their market-making account, and they don't feel like they need to take that extra precaution, they do not have to mask it. So there's no requirement from the plan participants about masking on proprietary or firm-owned accounts. And then how does this look in a sub-account allocation? This is a 2C item. This is not 2A, sub-account allocation, so we'll have a lot more conversations in the near future about this. But when you're coming in to represent a sub-account allocation on an allocation event, it's always going to be a customer trading account. This is the account you're actually finally allocating the shares to. So always a customer, actual customer account, and always must be masked. All right, so let's move on to the next slide. So thinking about trying to find different ways to represent this and help people get an understanding of what we're looking for, what we're needing to capture, is perhaps looking at it through a flow diagram like we have here, and sort of a decision tree to help you determine what it is that you should be doing here. So the first question is, if you ask yourself, how is my relationship with my customer placing a new order? This is not a sub-account allocation. New order, get a brand new order at my firm, new order event in CAT. How do I define that? Do I define that with an account number, or do I define that with a relationship ID, like a big fund manager, BFM1? So if you define it and you know it from an account number perspective, then that's what you're going to use for the FDID. Of course, mass versions thereof. But then here's some of the examples. It's an individual investor account. It's an FA master account, a top account, whatever kind of name that your firm uses to describe that kind of account. But it is an account number. Then the other route you could take is I do it from a relationship identifier, a big fund manager type example. That would be the relationship ID. So then the next flow here is I'm now making a sub-account allocation. So how do you define your relationship with your customers when you're doing allocations to the final custodial account of the customer, going to the customer's actual account? In this construct, it's only ever an account number. So that can be, the institutional sub-account numbers, individual investor account numbers, but it's always an account number. All right, so let's move on to the next slide. Again, we're including this slide to help illustrate that when the customer and account information is implemented later, How will this information get reported and how might it look in the customer and account database that would be differentiating it from what we're talking about in transaction data? So what we have laid out here is potential what this, we don't have a spec yet for the account data. So this is what it might be looking like. This is an indicative sort of look at where we might, where we're going, but this is still obviously not developed all the way yet. But when you come in to register your accounts, you're going to have to register the account number, actual account number, or a relationship ID. It can, because when you have that big fund manager example, you're going to have to register BFM1 so CAT knows what that is. Then the date the account is opened or becomes effective. So if it's an account, the actual date it's opened or becomes effective. Or if it's a relationship, the date the relationship was established. Then there will be an account type that will be in the account data. This is separate and distinct from the account holder type on the transaction data, which is used to identify whether somebody's retail, institutional, proprietary, it helps facilitate surveillance and regulatory use on the transaction data without having to touch the account and customer data. So this account type here, separate and distinct from what we're talking about on a transaction record. Examples might include on an actual an account, and there can be more than one value here, so it's important to stress that. But you could have cash, margin, IRA, things like that that will tell us what kind of account it is, not what type of customer it is, what kind of account it is. And then on the relationship identifier side, what you're going to have here is essentially just a value that says this is a relationship identifier. This is not an actual an account number. So this is how we'll identify that a particular FDID is a relationship ID as opposed to an actual account number. And then the customer type will have to be reported. This is required under the plan but is not clearly defined. So we'll be working in the coming months on, you know, defining that, what that looks like, and be communicating that. And then the LTIDs, and this will help facilitate, you know, large trader reporting requirements and the eventual, you know, desire to be able to retire blue sheets and things like that. So an LTID, and this would be the LTID associated with the account and or the relationship identifier, and which LTID you use and the hierarchy or things like that would be based on the existing LTID guidance for account reporting on blue sheets today as it exists. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide, and actually I think I've pretty much already covered this, the masking requirements. I would note, as I said, all customer or client account numbers have to be masked. The plan participants are not prescribing any specific methodology, but whatever is used to either mask or otherwise transform, it has to be an effective number that could not be used if compromised to walk into a branch or go online and affect a transaction in the account, or would constitute customer and account information as defined in the plan. So those are really the only guardrails that are there. Otherwise, you know, you can use whatever methodology you so desire. All right. So I think what I'm going to do is stop there. We have two appendixes that are included in the presentation that get into the first appendix A, contains some very specific scenarios and how it all comes together at the end of the day when we have customer and account reporting. We could go on for another hour or so just to get through these examples and scenarios. So I'm not going to do that today because, like I said, the objective of today is to get everyone to understand what an FDID is and what has to be on those transaction records in 2A2B. If these examples in the back help people obtain an understand a better understanding, hopefully they do. That's why they're included. And after today's call, we'll stop and see what level of understanding we have or we feel like we have across the industry. And if we need to do deeper dives and additional calls, we can certainly do that. And diving into these scenarios may assist in that effort. And then, like I said at the beginning of the call, too, Appendix B simply contains the actual reference, is the plan, the Rule 613, some FAQs. If people want to see the actual rule language or see the actual rule site and go look at it themselves, that information is there to help facilitate that process. All right, so why don't we stop there and open it up to a Q&A session, and see what kind of questions we have.
Thank you. If you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Once again, that's 1-4 to register for a question. One brief moment for the first question. And we have a question from the line of Joshua Schickman. Please go ahead.
Sure. I just want to make sure I understood what you said about tagging orders received from customers for which you have a relationship ID, for example, kind of institutional manager type scenario. If you have on all of your accounts for such a manager an ID that represents the relationship, but you also have individual kind of account numbers that more represent that relationship's interaction with a particular line of business of yours. So this is the account for that relationship at a program desk. This is the account for that relationship at a cash desk. So would it be acceptable to tag them all with the same FDID because they're the same relationship, or would the expectation be because the firm has broken it up in their own hierarchy that the FDID matches the hierarchy?
I think it would be acceptable to do the relationship level identifier as opposed to the more granular specific to a desk. But we can take that back and, you know, if we need to turn that into an FAQ, but I think that it would be, you know, it can be at that relationship level.
Okay, great. Thanks.
We have a question from Ronald Roberts. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if you could go back, I think about 2 or 3 slides. The slide was called Sources of, the one right before that. Yeah, this one. So when it's saying the source of the FDID, does that mean that the, for example, the retail account number can be part of the actual FDID? I had thought previously that the FDID could not contain the actual account, internal account number.
Right. It has to be masked. So I think what we meant by source of FDID here is what is the FDID derived from, or what does it, you know, represent? And that's a retail account number, which has to be masked. So whatever masking that, right, yeah, exactly.
So source doesn't mean it reuses part or all of the actual account number.
That's correct.
In fact, it cannot use part or all of the actual account number.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you. And can we get a copy of these slides?
Yes, they're actually posted on the website already. We posted them, I think, yesterday. So if you go to the home page, I think if you just scroll down a little bit, it shows you all the new stuff that's just been posted. It should be at the top of that.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
We have a question from the line of Prad Chand. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Pradeep Chand here. Just a quick question on the FDID for firm accounts. So we already have reached out to FIF on this question, and I think it has already been included in the list of queries. But the question is, do we have to absolutely populate the actual firm account number for FDID for firm orders, or is it okay if we submit a masked ID which represents the legal entity that you know, represents the firm accounts. Like, say, for example, if we have a legal entity of U.S. and if there are 100 accounts underneath them, can we just represent the legal entity level ID, or do we have to go to the individual account numbers and absolutely mention the account numbers?
You have to go to the actual, on a firm account level, it has to be the actual firm account. So, what, you know, if it's your whatever desk account, yes, actual account.
Actual account, okay. All right, thank you.
Sure.
Next question is from Mark Hendrickson. Please go ahead.
Hi, I think this may have already been asked and answered. However, in an advisory relationship where we might have aggregated orders, i.e. we may have multiple managers that are acting in discretion, but we have a bunch or a grouped order that is sent to an exchange or a market, do we need to relate that back to the underlying allocations? Because, again, that's going to be a firm account that's doing the aggregate block order. And I just see challenges in linking that back to, you know, any of the sub-account allocations at the, you know, the manager discretion level.
Right. So, yes, so you're going to have to report the grouped or aggregated order with whatever firm account, if that's like going through some average price account or if it might qualify for an entity ID of the firm, that has to be on that street-side aggregated order. Then the sub-account allocations, which come later, and I'm looking in actually our appendix here, I think it might be scenario 3 that you could take a look at where you've got a rep of the firm exercising discretion over multiple accounts at the firm, and you've got this aggregated order going out and then sub-account allocations coming later. And that scenario 3 in those slides illustrates how that happens and how those sub-account allocations get related to the aggregated order that went out under the firm account. So both legs get reported, and just the sub-accounts are in 2C account, or in sub-account allocation report, the firm-level aggregated order 2A, and they have two different FCIDs. The firm level is the firm's FCID or whatever appropriate account there is the firm used, and then it's the individual customer account, FCIDs representing those individual customer accounts come in the sub-account allocation. So maybe take a look at that scenario 3, and if that doesn't, if that is not on point to what you're looking at, if you want to call, anybody wants to call to help us, if you have like a specific scenario you want to walk through, some of these get a little bit complex, we're happy to, you know, talk through any of these individually, you know, on the phone.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Justin Lugones. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Shelley, for walking us through this and answering our questions. On slide 7, going back to the big fund manager example, it states that we can use BFM1 as the FDID. But if you go to slide 9, the first column, where it mentions the relationship ID, it says that it has to be masked there. So do we have to mask the BFM1, or can we use that as the FDID?
I don't think we've directly addressed that in the FAQs, but I think that we would probably be leaning towards masking just so that there's, you know, no easy way that it, because somebody could literally use the name of, I guess, you know, their institutional client, and that could become a problem. But we'll take that back about, you know, maybe addressing that specifically in an FAQ.
Great. Thank you.
Our next question is from Nathaniel Lawrence. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Nate. So you had mentioned that the only way the FDID would change is if the actual account number at the firm would change. If that occurs and the FDID has to change, what actual event types or fields would need to be that changed FJID would need to be reported under for CAT?
So that will come with the account system implementation. So the first phase of this, obviously, just the transaction data has the FDIDs on it. When we stand up the customer and account system, you're going to have to come in and register all of these FDIDs. So that's what it would look like on, let's see, what slide was that? That's like that slide 11. When you come in, you're going to register all this. So what we'll have built into that process is a change management or a modification type of a record or a process. So if you need to change an FDID for whatever reason, you'll have to tell us that the old one is no longer effective. Here's the effective date for the new one. But that hasn't been obviously designed or defined yet. It'll be part of that spec.
So nothing for – if there's a change in FDID for Phase 2A or 2B, then you technically cannot report that.
You would just start reporting the new FDID. So if you have an account – yeah, exactly. So an order last week, and then you change it this week, whatever event happens at your firm – and you changed it, then the orders going forward would have the new FDID on it. And in 2A, we won't be able to relate those, but when we get to the customer and account, which are better that one has on it, then we'll have that record of how it got changed, and we can historically link it the customer and account base. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Once again, if you'd like to register for a question, please press 1-4. To retract your question, please press 1-3. We have a question from the line of Matthew Silva. Please go ahead.
Hi. Sort of similar to one of the prior questions there. So if the source for a client account is going to be the client's retail account number, are you saying that that must be the sole source? Or can the source be the retail account number combined with some other client information and then math?
I think if I understand your question, because we're not mandating a specific masking methodology, you can take that retail account number and transform it in whatever way you think is appropriate to meet the guardrails we talked about. I think we may revisit using this word source, because all we're trying to represent here is what does the FDID represent, and it's the retail account number in a masked form. So how you do that masking would be left up to you, assuming it can't be used, to affect a transaction, or it doesn't meet the definition of customer account data under the plan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question is from Stephen Golden. Please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Stephen from BMO. My question has to do with the actual collection and retention of this data. Is this data that could come from our referential database and basically be routed back into the trading system via our OMS system? Or is it something that has to come from a separate master data file?
So, if I follow your question correctly, in 2A, all that's being reported is the transaction data. So you will have to lift this number from whatever system you have and get it on the transaction data that comes in a single data source to CAT in 2A. And we get the customer and account data, those customer and account records probably will be feeding out of a different system into a completely separate system in CAT as well. So, but the thing that links the transaction data to the customer and account data is the FDID. So that's sort of the key to the castle here, to take us from transaction to customer and account, and obviously customer and account is, a big part of what we're doing in CAT 4. So in 2A, you're going to have to lift that number out of those customer account systems and get it onto your transaction data. So then we link the two later Did I understand your question correctly?
Well, actually, what I was trying to find out whether that number, in order to get into the transaction data, can it come directly from the OMS system? Let's say I'm using Fidessa, right? Can I give that number to Fidessa to append to every trade so that when they send me a file showing all the trades transacted, all the orders transacted, it has that FDID number or that customer ID number?
That sounds reasonable if that's how you're set up, and each of that number is each individual customer account,
correct,
obviously. I don't know why not.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
We have a question from Martin Price. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question is about orders that we receive through our overseas affiliate branches. In some cases, we might know who the end client is, but in others, we don't. Would it be acceptable, you think, to consider each affiliate as a fund manager and just assign a relationship ID to the affiliate?
Yeah, if I follow your question correctly, and we actually have an FAQ, I believe this is what you're asking. I think it's D1. So you have an affiliate that's introducing the order to you. That affiliate is your customer, not the customer behind the affiliate, if I'm following your question correctly.
Yes.
Okay,
yes, that's
so and, look at FAQ D1. And it talks about how the affiliate or the non-U.S. BD sending the order is it will be the FDID of that affiliate, an account of that affiliate, and the CCID would be the affiliate, and not the foreign customer.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Our next question is from Ruchika Sani. Please go ahead.
Hi, my question is that in case a trading account is not available, can we, and we have a legal ID, can we use the legal ID as the relationship ID?
So the trading account is not available. Is this a customer?
So it's not set up. Yeah, customer order, and it's not set up yet.
Not set up yet. So it's like the first day the account exists or something and it hasn't made it to your system yet, or the final account number. You know what, let us take that back because I'm not sure that we have thought or provided, thought that one completely through. So make sure I got it. Brand new account, and until you get the account number assigned, what do? Is that correct? Under interpretation of your question. Okay, maybe she dropped. So I think I got the question. So we'll take that one back. Good question. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Rhett Cole. Please go ahead.
Hi, apologies if this has already been answered, but how many characters are we limited to for the FDID?
I do not have that off the top of my head. Someone here in the room with me happens to have the spec. So it might be 40, but let's look and see. 40 alphanumeric characters.
40?
40, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
We have a question from Michael Gideon. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys, how you doing? I have a question regarding, CCID, relationship ID, in some cases we'll have institutions that will trade that we would have a relationship ID attached to. I understand that. But when we have retail clients that are high net worth and we're applying a CCID to that, how are you going to know and differentiate between two of those when they necessarily could be trading in two different systems?
All right, so you have a retail high net worth client
trading in a high touch system, yeah, like an OMS.
Okay, and that OMS does not have an account number available to it?
Well, it would. They would have maybe multiple accounts that they're trading for that they actually have control over.
Okay, so you're going to come in with sub-account allocations later?
After the fact, yes.
Okay, so the initial order out that will later be allocated is not hitting a account number, so to speak. It's a very similar, you just have like a
name.
Almost
like it's almost like a short name, and then they would be, maybe they're trading on behalf of three of their accounts, their retail accounts, and then they're just allocating them after the fact at the same average price. But they're still technically a retail customer.
Right. I think we'll take that one back, but it seems to me that the relationship ID construct would work because it's the same general framework. It's just not an institution.
Okay, that makes sense then. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but, you know, we can make sure we get that incorporated. I want to take that back, and we can acknowledge that in writing.
Okay.
Okay.
Our next question is from Chen Ouyang. Please go ahead.
Yeah, that's Chen from BNP Paribas. We know later on we are going to submit the customer account separate information into your repository. The question is, if you have a piece of information showing the slides, is that you expect any data changing will be needed to reflect the new FDID to be masked it, or... I mean, how that change will be related?
So, make sure I understand your question. When you start reporting in 2A with some FDIDs, and then later when you come in to register those for the customer and account database, maybe they've changed since the transactions were reported. Is that what you're saying?
Say you have account number and you have customer time and you have LT ID. I mean, the information, initially we submit the FDID in our transaction and all the FID plus all the additional field into your repository. Something is modified in the repository data, do we need to have a new FDID, or we can map to the same FDID?
Unless the underlying account number has changed, the FDID should not change.
So the driven value is the account number in the set of data provided to you.
And the set of data that you're talking about, is that the customer and account data that will come later?
Yeah.
Okay, so if something changes between 2A and when you come in to register those accounts, I think that it's going to be a go forward when you register the account for the first time in that 2022 timeframe. If I follow what you're saying, I think we're going to come in and try to grab a bunch of historical changes that have occurred since 2A. I don't know if I'm following what you're asking correctly or not, though. We won't have anything in between 2A and customer and account. All we have is an FDID on the transaction record. We don't have any other information about it whatsoever, and we won't until the customer and account database gets established and you register all those accounts. So there could be this period of time where something might have changed from when you reported a transaction in 2020 to when you register the accounts in 2022. So we'll make sure we address that, talk about that, and what, if anything, that we would have to do to obtain information about that. I hope I got it sort of what you're asking.
I think that right now, I just want to make sure if right now we submit a transaction and anything will be there's nothing can be changed later on. I mean.
Oh, so it's your question, you report an order with an SCID, and then right. later you realize you gave CAT the wrong SCID, so you want to amend your order with the correct SCID? Well, you know what? If you want to give the help desk a call and we can get the right person, you know, I can talk to you, whatever, we can get in far in depth. We make sure we understand your question. So if you give us a call, that would be great.
Yeah. Our next question is from Maria Zeckhausen. Please go ahead.
Okay. Shelley, I was looking at these concepts about the relationship ID and the account ID. So what if you, on day one, have a relationship that you'd represent with a relationship ID, but later on you set up an account structure with what was previously the relationship, so you would then have a different FDID. What's your thinking around that and the need to tie the two together?
So I think it's essentially almost like, if I'm following what you're saying correctly, almost like changing an account number. Like your system knew it as BFM1 today, but tomorrow you changed your system so it knows that same thing as 789.
Sounds about right.
Okay. So I think that you would treat that when we stand up the customer and account database as an account number change. So you would change the FDID, and you would have to come in and reflect that as like a modified FDID or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Our next question is from Anshul Agarwal. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question is that will the industry member have the visibility of the CCID, or it will be internal for CAT to do the regulatory surveillance across broker-dealers? And any regulatory inquiry would be referenced by FDID only.
So the broker-dealers will not have the CCID. You are correct. So if you're going to receive a regulatory inquiry, yes, it's probably going to be from the FDID.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
And we have a question from Michael Gideon. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I have one more question. It was actually just asked 2 questions ago, but I'll just touch on it for one more second. With regards to the relationship IDs that we'll be creating, from the clearing firm standpoint and an OMS, the two when they speak to each other, and we're placing the order, the new order events in relationship IDs, and they eventually get booked into allocation trading accounts that have unique FDIDs associated with them. How is the clearing firm going to understand the relationship between all of those trading accounts and the relationship ID?
So the allocations are not linked to the orders that are placed by entity or institutional relationship with and the relationship ID. Those orders go in. Then if I'm following, I want to make sure I follow your question correctly. And then later the sub-account allocations come in. And how are the FDIDs from the sub-account allocations associated with the relationship ID that got reported as the FDID on the top order? Am I following correctly? Your question?
Yeah, so if an advisor places an order for 100,000 shares and then they go and allocate that 100,000 across 15 sub-accounts, the end result of the order data and the underlying account data linking together, we're going to be submitting that relationship ID to CAT that identifies the advisor who placed the order initially. But each individual sub-account is going to have their own unique FDID.
Right. So that's what I would point you back to in the Appendix A, Scenario 4, Scenario 5, I think, might address your flow. And actually what happens at the end of the day is these get associated by CCID, not FDID.
Okay.
and you can look at that. And when you take a look at that, if you have any questions at all, you know, just give us a call.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
And we have a question from Mitesh Janani. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. A quick question about, so for relationship ID, can SROs allow for firms to register multiple large trade IDs and multiple LEIs to a relationship ID?
Yes. So if you go back to, like, you know, the very first slide I think we talked about where a customer can have more than one trading account and a trading account can have more than one customer. So if you think of relationship ID like a trading account, then you could have more than one LEI or LCID associated with that, if I followed your question correctly.
Yep, thank you.
Good.
Once again, if you'd like to register for a question, please press 1-4 on your telephone. We have a question from Matthew Connolly. Please go ahead.
Hi. Really quickly, I'm from SVB Lyric. Really quickly, given the huge numbers of FDIDs that need to be created industry-wide, unless there's some sort of central depository of some sort, what would prevent one firm from creating a duplicate FDID from another firm? I imagine, like, the concept being, you know, like a Social Security number. If you try to apply for this Social Security number, you can't get it because somebody else already has it?
Right. Right. So FDID is unique within a single firm. It is not unique across firms. The CCID, which gets generated from a Social Security number, and that's a whole other process and conversation. Social Security numbers won't ultimately be there, but that CCID creation is a whole other process, and that is unique across broker-dealers. FDID is only unique inside a single broker-dealer. And so CAT would have to use a combination of the identity of the broker-dealer and the FDID to see that it's a separate trading account, and it will only be looking inside a single broker-dealer for FDID.
Understood. Great. Thank you.
Sure.
And we have a question from Juliana Arias. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Juliana from LPL Financial. So I guess piggybacking out of that question between the FDID and CCID, is the expectation that firms will be creating the CCID also at a later phase, or is that something that the plan provider will be assigning?
So that process is still under analysis and development. But that will happen in the customer and account phase, and the firm will have to provide, again, this is being talked about because of the security issues and such around Social Security numbers, but the firm would be providing the information that uniquely identifies the customer to let a CCID get created. The firm will not be creating its own CCID. It's going to probably have to use some form of transmission of a social in a very secure manner that, like I said, there's a lot of conversation in the industry about and among some industry groups about how that will play out. But bottom line, you don't have to create a CCID. That'll be done in CAT, and that'll happen in that later, 2020 timeframe.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
And we have a follow-up from Ruchika Sani. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So this is more of a clarification. So like let's say in phase 2A, right, we choose to mask the trading accounts and report that as an FDID. For phase 2E, we don't have the requirements yet, like what the CAT customer data information file is going to be like, but I'm assuming like whatever FDIDs we report there, they would need to be masked using the same methodology that
right.
we used in phase 2A.
That's right. And, if you take a quick look at slide 11, when you come in to register all of this, you're obviously going to have to tell us the masked FDID, and then here is the associated information that goes with it. And that could include the real account number. We haven't got that far in that spec development. But you are right. You are going to need to know what that masking methodology is so that you can register those accounts into EU.
Got it. Thank you.
Sure.
And we have a follow-up question from Matthew Henry. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. I just have one question for you on corrections. If you had sent an order in, you know, day one as a certain institution and you had that all marked and set and done, the trade was done, it was booked and everything, you find out the next day it was a completely different institution. Does that follow through if I do a correction into CAT to change that from the day one, who it should have been?
Yeah, I think what that would look like is on the transaction data, you would have to come in with a correction for that order. So, and there'll be a mechanism in the transaction data to correct record that wasn't rejected or had no error on it, right? Because CAT's not going to know.
So right, CAT wouldn't know.
CAT wouldn't
so
know.
So my back office would have to link to CAT to the
yeah.
OMS that it went through to do that correction on CAT.
Yeah, you'll have to come in and correct that new order that to the correct SCID.
And my question is, would the back office, say my clearing firm, when I make that correction, would that flow through the OMS to correct the original data on CAT?
I don't think I could answer that. I don't know how those systems talk.
Okay. I'll have to talk to my clearing firm about that one. Thank you.
Sure.
And there are no further questions at this time.
All right, great. Well, thank you all very much. I know there's a lot of material here, so please don't hesitate to call the CAT Help Desk. And, you know, we're happy to walk through any specific examples or scenarios with anyone to help get clarity. And, you know, again, we'll stop and assess and see, talk through with some of the other, some of the industry groups to see if we think we need to follow up on this to make sure people get the level of understanding they need. So I appreciate everyone's time this afternoon. And thank you very much. Goodbye.
This does conclude the call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.